rock and roll band. Come on, baby, give me your hand. Oh, baby, do you wanna dance? Or do you wanna dance under the moonlight? Squeeze and hug me all through the night.
And good afternoon, everybody. It's 2:03. This is Zeke here, and we're here with Rachel. We're here with Gwen, and everybody's calling me fascist today. But yeah,
only me.
It is the Fascist Movement Museum for what's today? October 1, 2009. It's 2:03 in the afternoon. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, or maybe potentially you're listening to us on your computer, your iPod, something like that, movement-museum.blogspot.com, or just dump Movement Museum into iTunes and see what shows up. As per normal, we have a completely empty and spacey, fully free show with absolutely nothing happening whatsoever.
We might have one or two things.
You think?
Just to fill the time.
Okay, okay. And do you feel like which one? Explain it to people, some of the stuff that they might hear?
Yeah, well, first off all, we, of course, will have our dance poem of the week, courtesy of Gwen, followed by a telephone interview with Myriam Ginestier, and hopefully Alexis O'Hara from Studio 303 will be coming in. They are celebrating their 20th anniversary on the 6th of October.
You think they should get into, which one, a round of applause for that? Less than 20 years in dance in Montreal?
Well, considering we're a dance show on the radio, yeah. We shall be hopefully hearing about them because, of course, Studio 303 is pretty relevant to dance in Montreal. I know a lot of you listeners out there, if you have dance connections, you will have also Studio 303 connections. We'll also probably get around to playing part three of our Alvin Ailey interview, and we'll have the awesome Montreal dancing calendar and auditions. And hopefully, if we have time, we might get around to part six of Circuit Est.
Actually, to be honest, I would flip it, given that we've been bumping Alvin Ailey for years, months, decades.
You say bump him some more?
Well, if we don't have time, I would bump Alvin Ailey and then put the Circuit Est people on, because that is, it's an 11-part series. I actually finished slicing and dicing it over the weekend, and okay. I'm looking forward to, because they have a whole whack of other cool stuff, like the Visage de Danse stuff, and I just got an email saying, I think we might have copies of it. My fingers are crossed.
Oh, great.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I think apart from that, are we ready for a dance poem?
I think so, yes.
Okay, listeners, I guess last week we were talking about, I can't even remember whose dance piece it was. Who was it that you saw that turned and turned around and around? Zeke. Do you remember?
Yeah, I turned off my microphone so I could go make the phone call, and then you want me back on air.
It doesn't really
matter. Yeah, it was part of the Destination Danse at Tangente. It was Nicera. No, you give me a wrong paper. You're confusing me there. Obviously.
Your telephone number.
Anyways,
I have the phone number right here.
Regardless, Zeke saw somebody kind of doing maybe what we were thinking was whirling dervish kind of dancing last week. And then I just kept thinking all week long about how people don't get dizzy when they whirl and how that happens. So in honor of my weeks of thought of twirling, I'm going to read a poem by Rumi, because Rumi was a twirler, a whirling dervish, I guess, part of his practice. Okay, so here it is. Whatever there is only he. Your footsteps there in dancing. The whirling sea belongs to you, and you belong to whirling. What can I do when love appears and put its claws around my neck? I grasp it, take it to my breast and drag it into whirling. And when the bosom of the motes is filled with glow of sun, they enter all the dance, and do not complain in whirling. That's it. That is Rumi's poem. So I don't know. It doesn't answer how people don't get dizzy when they are whirling. But I think that people actually put their center of focus onto their hand, and that's how they manage it.
I thought you had to focus onto something a further distance, like a point.
That's true too, but the thing is that they're not, because like generally when you are turning, like a dancer would be turning or pirouetting, you'd have your focus outward. But in this case, they don't do the head spinning, so that there is no focus outwards, which would also be why it's an inward kind of thing, you know what I mean? Spiritual or whatever. So anyways, supposedly that's what I read. That's what somebody's answer, but I'm not quite sure if they were themselves a whirling dervish.
We should ask the next dancer we speak to.
Mm-hmm. We should.
And then one thing, since I was preoccupied dialing phone numbers and stuff like that, can you give me the name and the title again, please?
I don't know the title, but I knew that it's written by Rumi.
Okay.
Sorry, it was kind of a cut and paste. I got it out of an Anne Lamott article.
Cool. At which point, you ready for the big interview?
Sure.
Okay, I think we now have Miriam Gestetner on the phone. You there?
Oh, am I the big interview?
You are the big interview. Dump.
We've thrown out every other segment just for you, Miriam.
Ooh, that's fabulous.
Not quite, but welcome to the show. And seeing as Studio 303 is turning 20 and you're having a huge fandango at Cinquième Salle on October the 6th, we'd like to hear from you about what's happening and what turning 20 means for Studio 303.
Okay. Is that the question?
Yep.
Okay. Well, you know, turning 20 is a real landmark because it's been a real struggle to survive, but it's also been a lot of really, really good times. So, it's just a really, really exciting landmark. And the event was begun, we started talking about it with the board, and, you know, there was a lot of pressure to do a kind of fundraising gala at the Place des Arts with big companies and to sort of make a splash and be noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't completely sit well with me because I thought we're not really about big companies. You know, our people are emerging artists and experimental artists. And I thought, how can we do something at Place des Arts and still make a splash, but involve the artists that are directly part of Studio 303 as well as with, you know, together with some more known bodies. So that's where the idea of this an exquisite corpse, choreographed exquisite corpse came.
So the event on the 6th of October, it's all new choreography, is it?
Yeah, it's all new work. Some of it may be, you know, a kind of phrase that's been adapted, but it's probably for an upcoming project anyway. So I don't think, no one will see things they've seen before, that's for sure.
And are the choreographers using a team of dancers? How many dancers are going to be involved, and will they be performing all the different works? Is there like one? Yeah.
Well, we invited 20 separate choreographers, mm-hmm, from really very diverse communities and aesthetics to present and create a 3-minute piece. Mm-hmm. Some of them are dancing in their own work. Mm-hmm. Some are having someone else dance. So I would say the majority are solos, but then there's a few duets, trios, and one really big group number, and one completely surprising number.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
So, in fact, I think there's going to be on stage, there's going to be maybe almost 60 performers in all.
Wow. You know? And Miriam, how long have you been with Studio 303?
I've been almost 20 years.
Wow. So how have you seen the studio develop, and have you seen the relationship of dance developing in Montreal?
I mean, when I started at Studio 303, I wasn't really part of the dance community for several years. It was really just a hobby, and I went there because I was interested in taking classes in exchange for work. So I wasn't that aware of it at the time. I had just completed a degree in English literature. But it was a very fun environment to work in. No one was making any money at all, but life was really cheap at the time. We even squatted our office for the first 5 years or so.
Wow.
And, and then since then it's been a gradual learning process, and I certainly know hundreds of dancers now after being there for 20 years, and I did have a very short-lived professional dance career myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a community that I think it's a really wonderful community in Montreal. I think there's a lot of entraide, people helping out each other. And I think a lot of that's come about because of the Regroupement Québécois de la Danse being such a force for bringing people together and activating.
Yeah. So Montreal is quite like world famous for its dance and for mm-hmm. the quality of the dance shows it does. How much of this, I've noticed that dance can also be quite strong in other bilingual communities or communities where, there are issues around language politics. Have you ever considered that, or do you think that...
I have. I think about it a lot because I'm really... I'm interested in language issues, and I love living in a bilingual culture.
Mm-hmm.
I really miss it when I'm not in that, and I have about it. When I went to Brussels, I thought, wow, this is unusual. it's very similar to Montreal in some ways, and also has the world famous dance scene. And I think those two things are in common, because sometimes you want to appeal to a broad audience and you don't want to deal with language issues. And that's why I'm interested in nonverbal work, be it dance or interdisciplinary work or performance art. And so I invest energy in trying to develop that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also that's why maybe the community is so thriving and helps each other out so much also, because they work together a lot more. There's a lot of crossover, whereas of course in theater, Anglophone performers are really
separated.
Anglophone plays and there's not a lot of crossing over in theater, for example, or film.
And do you see Studio 303 changing over the next 5-10 years? Do you have any plans up your sleeve for it?
I'm not much of a planner, a header. I'm kind of a go with the flow and respond to changes that are happening in the community. But I do see that we're definitely on a track where we're investing more in a little bit long term in certain artists.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've had, we've supported artists in lots of ways, but at a certain point, they need that extra help. I think a lot of the artists we've been helping are kind of ready to tour now, and I'm trying to figure out ways how we can support that evolution in their careers.
Yeah.
So we're focusing a lot more on support services and development, and perhaps a little less on actual presenting.
Yeah.
But that's also just because we're getting funded more for producing and developing versus presenting. So
right, because I was on your website today and I was just looking at the support you offer for individual dancers, choreographers, in terms of assisting them to submit mm-hmm. grants, submit for grant applications. And it was quite novel. It's not something I was aware of before. So,
no, it's new.
Yeah.
That's new this year.
So that's definitely... I think it is probably an important service to offer choreographers and to the community. You were saying already that's kind of becoming more a feature in terms of what Studio 303 does. But going back to work and that Studio 3 is actually producing and showing, what are some of your favorite shows that have happened?
You took my question.
Oh
no. it's so, I'm so unprepared for the favorite show question. I was asked it before, but we've presented extraordinary works that from abroad, but I guess it's more interesting perhaps if I talk about local artists. And I would say some of the ones that I'm most proud of or that really gelled with our mandate and what we're about are, for example, Sarah Williams did an evening of three commissioned solos and that were around the theme of gender,
mm-hmm.
which is something that interests me. And I like that it was, it's a solo project by an artist that it involves so many different influences, because she commissioned work from George Stamos, who's an incredible choreographer,
mm-hmm.
and then Nathalie Claude, who is more an experimental physical theater artist, and then she also commissioned a piece from Eddie Ladd, who is a new media performance artist from Wales.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun that through one individual we were able to have all those influences, and I think Studio 303 projects are always about a kind of culmination of lots of energies and perspectives. And I guess another one of my favorite recent experiences was Factory Project last year,
mm-hmm.
because it was just so much fun. I felt like Studio 303 itself became an artist in residence, because mm-hmm. we moved to the Eastern Bloc for 10 days. I even brought my laptop there and just worked from there. And it was fun to have that kind of really daily proximity with artists, to be sharing the space with them every day. And it was fun because it was also a collaboration with Out Productions, which brought in artists that we would never normally work with, many from theater backgrounds, people from Calgary, Toronto, and lots of people that didn't know each other, too. That's always fun when the artists don't know each other.
Yeah. So,
As a sort of follow-up question, it's a sort of mm-hmm. thing where let me spit this out properly. What would you consider the most embarrassing moment? I won't say the worst one, but the one that you sort of cringe every time you think, but then giggle slightly.
Okay. Well, I won't go there because that would possibly be a judgment.
No names.
On the client's work. Why don't I just tell you a funny moment instead of an embarrassing moment?
That's
another one I'm kind of proud of. But it's this an interdisciplinary dance singer, movement artist from Bulgaria called Ivo Dimchev,
mm-hmm.
and he did an incredible visceral performance piece called Lies from the White Whore's Boudoir or something like that. And during the performance, at one point he actually takes out a syringe and takes some blood from his arm and puts it in a little test tube, and then proceeds to auction it to the audience. And he is relentless. I mean, if it takes, 30 minutes to get someone to bid, he will wait. Like, the show stops, and he's really, really pushy. And then people start participating, and he managed to sell to someone in the audience a vial of his blood for $50.
Sorry to interrupt, but I've seen him perform, and in Dublin I think he only got around €20.
That's it. And what I'm proud of is that he said that he got the highest price in Montreal that he'd ever gotten.
Wow.
He was amazed. His eyes were really like, wow. Oh, I'm glad that you saw that piece.
Yeah, so that's interesting. That's kind of interesting for me to hear, because I'm into the crossover between performance and dance. So, yeah, although he's obviously very technically, he's very flexible, very physical,
yeah.
I would have had him in my mind as a performance artist.
So
it's good to see that Studio 3 are kind of really open-minded to the kinds of shows that they program and the work that they are producing.
Well, actually, it was presented in the context of our interdisciplinary series.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that, we used to have an interdisciplinary series and the Vernissage Danse series, and it got really irritating because so many projects like Sarah Williams's and perhaps Ivo's as well, where I just think, well, it's kind of both, know? So we eliminated those two categories, and now we just let each event stand on its own, and sometimes they're dance, sometimes they're interdisciplinary, sometimes they're both. Sometimes they're something else.
So, Zeke, do you have any more questions?
I can come up with some, but no, you asked mine, and then I had the follow-up question, and then I was quite, that's a nice sort of serendipity thing that you saw the performance that was here and so on.
Yeah.
Who would have thunk?
Well, I guess.
Yeah, where did you see that show?
I've seen it in Dublin, in Ireland. Okay. Yeah. In the Project Arts Centre. Mm-hmm. But, Gwen?
Yes.
Do you have any questions?
No, I don't.
Well, I have a couple more questions, actually, Miriam. So I'm just checking with these guys to be sure. But I also wanted to ask you whether there was anything that you'd like to talk about in terms of the 20th anniversary and the event. Is there information that you want to give any listeners about how to get tickets or any of that?
Or about the content, you mean?
And the content, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a special event that's going to combine kind of a high art, place des arts vibe with a low art, silly, fun, creative context, a la Studio 303. And like I said, there's going to be almost 60 artists hitting the stage at some point or another. It's a short show. It's just 1 hour. There's a pre show in the lobby that happens from 7:30 to 8 with an interactive installation by Emmanuel Jout. And then the show itself is a really amazing opportunity for people who don't know the dance scene well or who do see it well to see a really broad cross section of work from established older generation of choreographers like Louise Bédard and Danielle Soulière to big successes like Victor Quijada, Rubber Band Dance Group, to the emerging new generation like Sasha Klein-Platt. And then I also have someone, Dario Millard, who's from last season, So You Think You Can Dance Canada, whose work I just love that blends African and hip-hop. He's a gorgeous young choreographer. So it's going to be fun, and there's something for everyone. It's going to be really weird, you know?
Yeah.
It'll just change every 3 minutes. But I think it should be really exciting. And then we're going to have a party at Studio 303 afterwards that everybody is welcome to come to as of about 9:30.
Yeah. So because you have 20 choreographers, it's quite a lot, and I imagine you didn't manage to get them all in the same place at the same time. What kind of a brief did you give them? Did you just carte blanche, give me, we're looking for 3 minutes?
Well, they were given carte blanche, but they were also assigned a piece of music and local performance artist who's been involved with 303 in many, many ways, Alexis O'Hara, composed 20 three-minute pieces of music. She's crazy prolific, so that was quite the challenge, but she did it. And so they were assigned a piece of music, and then also because it's based on a game, which is The Exquisite Corpse, it's a drawing game where you draw a head, fold the paper, pass it on, someone draws another part of the body, passes it on, and then when you unfold it, you have this crazy composite drawing.
Yeah, so how does that work? Did each choreographer see the previous choreographer's piece? Or?
No, nobody saw anything until last Monday when they all showed what they'd made. I took photos. In our office, we have a wall covered with posters and postcards of dance shows that have happened in Montreal or at 303. And we just randomly, I took photographs of 20 bodies that I could find on our wall. And assigned everybody with a starting position and an end position so that each piece overlaps with the same ending or starting position. And then I gave them a place on the stage where they had to be at the beginning and be at the end.
Great. So
it's like a relay.
So it's exactly like a dance Exquisite Corpse.
It is.
It follows all the rules.
Yeah.
And where, how much are tickets for the performance?
Tickets are $40 for the performance, and because it's a benefit for Studio 303. And if you buy tickets at Studio 303, it really is $40. If you buy them at Place des Arts or online, there are surcharges associated. So people can find information on our website, studio303.ca.
And then the yeah. when, the when and the where, just so that we can sort of beat it into people's heads that they should get out, they should cough up the cash, and they should come in numbers.
All right. Well, it's Tuesday night. It's one night only. And if they want good seats, they should buy their tickets definitely in advance. And it starts in the theater at 8 o'clock, but the pre-show is as of 7:30 in the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up at the 5th Salle at Place des Arts.
Which is the best venue in Place des Arts.
Yeah, it's really lovely. Mm-hmm. It's huge, big but intimate. And then afterwards, there's an after party at Studios 303. So we really hope everyone will be able to come. For people who have a little bit of extra spending money, there are also a few VIP tickets left, for which there's also a special pre-show cocktail.
Ooh.
With intimate one-on-one theater pieces created by local artists under the guidance of Theater Replacement.
That gets a double ooh.
Yeah, that's a double ooh. And that special cocktail thing, it's like a meal and performances, that starts at 6 o'clock. However, you have to, that's $200, but $160 is a tax-deductible donation.
And then the food is worth it.
Yeah. So anyone that, you know, and for that, you just call our office or look on our website also. Mm-hmm.
Great. So thank you so much, Miriam, for talking to us.
Yeah.
And
congratulations.
Congratulations
20
on
20 years.
20 years
is kick-ass.
Oh, thank you, guys.
And we hope that it's going to be a huge success. I'm sure it will
be. Yeah, tickets are selling really well. So I think it'll be really a great night.
Thank you very much. And we look forward to Richmond seeing you. Okay.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye. So how fascistic was I? I'm just fascist Zeke.
That was outside of the studio, Zeke.
And outside and inside, everything is Movement Museum, which you're listening to on CKUT 90.3 FM, movement-museum.blogspot.com, or on Facebook or on iTunes. And just to clue you in, since none of you who are listening were outside, is I got called a fascist before the show, and my blood started to boil, and my nostrils flared, and I'm just taking full advantage of, being on the air, that I can broadcast it to everybody. Can you hear my chest thump? I am a fascist. However, enough about that. It's 2:30. We should get back to some serious stuff. I think we need to now, whip me with a wet noodle while we listen to some ads. And we're back. It's 2:32. You're listening to Movement Museum with Gwen, Rachel, and myself, Zeke, on CKUT 90.3 FM, movement-museum.blogspot.com, on your computer, Movement Museum into iTunes, or just look for us on Facebook. Yeah, hold on. I got the fancy stuff that I'm so, so pleased about. We have had 695 downloads of Movement Museum, which is, to me, very, very impressive. We have 64 Facebook fans. There have been 1,095 page views of the blog, and then we have 16 subscribers, of which I think like 8 are on iTunes. You're just nodding sagely there, very far away from your microphone, Rachel.
I'm very impressed with the amount of episodes downloaded.
And it's just going to get larger and larger. Okay. Enough of the self-congratulatory stuff. We should be, yes, congratulating Miriam. We should be congratulating all sorts of other people, but not us, because we're just here to talk about dance in Montreal and have fun doing it. Hence why I keep making the really, really bad jokes. Yeah, somehow I have a feeling, yes, my timing is off. Nobody's laughing at my jokes except for me. And
there was an awkward giggle there if you didn't hear it. And another.
And yeah, for those of you who have been long-time listeners, you know that we are in the midst of broadcasting the Sacriest Roundtable discussion on music and choreography, which happened back in June, and I had the piece of paper which listed off everybody who took part. I remember Jose Navas. I remember Guy Cools. I remember Mateo Firejean or something like that. And yeah, I'm spacing on it, but we now have part six. And for those of you who are interested, there will be another five parts. I succeeded in chopping it up into roughly 10-minute segments. And then I was very pleased to get received by email this afternoon that they have a whole whack of other series, this Visage de Danse stuff that's happening starting next week. And yeah, go there first because it has not been signed with blood and stamped and sealed by a notary, and I haven't promised my firstborn son or any soul so as to get it. But there is a possibility. Keep your fingers crossed that we will be getting copies of it. Plus, on top of it, there's tons of others. But enough about me foaming at the mouth and so on. Let's listen to part six.
Je m'en allais dire qu'il est assez rare qu'un compositeur demande la collaboration à un chorégraphe. C'est plutôt l'inverse. J'en discutais d'ailleurs avec des collègues chorégraphes, puis on discutait entre nous, on disait, mais est-ce que quelqu'un t'a déjà invité pour travailler? Est-ce qu'un compositeur t'a déjà invité? Puis on se disait, c'est très, très rare que ce phénomène existe. La danse est un art qui invite la transdisciplinarité. Par contre, c'est rare, les projets initiés par exemple par un compositeur se font rares. Moi, j'en ai connu un récemment avec Michel Gonneville, où c'est vraiment un compositeur qui a pris d'emblée, qui a invité les gens à travailler autour de son projet, mais généralement, cette forme de pseudo-hiérarchie est due au fait que quelqu'un qui un jour prend le leadership, qui initie...
Qui génère le projet.
Le projet.
Puis, concernant les tendances, j'avais une autre question aussi. Est-ce que les nationalités ou les backgrounds culturels, puis Mathéo peut peut-être aussi répondre à ça, est-ce que les nationalités et les backgrounds culturels influencent le type d'approche dans la relation dans ces musiques chez les créateurs? Par exemple, il est dit que la danse en Flandre est vraiment très, très liée à la musique et à un travail très collaboratif. D'où est-ce que ça vient, par exemple?
Je pense pas plus que dans d'autres, qu'ici ou qu'ailleurs. Mais c'est vrai que s'il y a des tendances, c'est que chaque communauté artistique rassemble un certain nombre de personnes qui sont de la même génération, qui ont étudié ensemble, qui se croisent dans le travail, dans les bars, et c'est là qu'il y a des façons de faire qui se développent. Et si on prend la danse flamande des années 80, il y avait Moudra de Béjar, qui était comme une... C'était la seule formation de danse qui existait, qui était très lié à la musique. Il y avait Moudra, important à Moudra, il y avait Fernand Schirren, qui était un professeur de rythme, qui d'abord à Moudra, après Antares l'a réinvité quand il a ouvert Parts. Et Schirren était, c'est un personnage très qui a influencé toute une génération de chorégraphe, de metteur en scène, des musiciens qui étaient passés par lui. Alors c'est lui comme individu qui a réuni une certaine génération de gens. Et ces générations-là, c'était comme Michel Andemay et Antares, c'était des deux amis qui vont à l'école ensemble. Et le soir, quand ils quittent l'école, il y a Thierry Demay, qui est le frère d'une des deux, qui viennent le rejoindre, ils vont au bar et ils commencent à... Ça, c'était vraiment au début de carrière, quand ils étaient tous les trois dans leur vingtaine. Et ils commencent à développer chaque en soi son propre parcours, mais ils collaborent dès la première journée. Et c'est comme ça qu'après, avec un recul de 15 ou 20 ans, il y a toute une réécriture de l'histoire qui fait qui peut-être donne trop de... qui a aussi la danse, la musique était comme intégrée en Belgique dès le début. Ça se fait par des rencontres des gens uniques, je pense. Et c'est pas différent à Londres, c'était pas différent ici.
Je vais poser une dernière question et puis vous passez le micro. Donc, si vous avez, enfin, il y en a sûrement qui brûlent déjà vos lèvres, mais si vous avez envie de commencer à y penser pour les autres. La dernière question, quel duo de chorégraphes-compositeurs, vous inspire plus particulièrement les uns et les autres dans l'histoire ou dans l'actualité? Oui, Matteo.
Me? Stravinsky and Nijinska, maybe. Lenos.
Oh, yes.
Cage and Cunningham, of course.
Right.
For me, the thing about Cage and Cunningham is everybody, the myth is that, Cage wrote some music and Cunningham did a dance, and then the night of the thing they put it on, but people forget that they were lovers for 30 years. Of course it was going to work. That's collaboration. That's no, not to be lovers. Sorry, that's wrong. That's jet lag. No, there's so much. It's the same with me and Jonathan, and we're not lovers. There's so much, so little needs to be said after 20 years. All the sparring, all the conversations that one assumes go on in new collaborations happens because we're friends and because we know each other. And I'm not saying that's my favorite duo, but Cage and Cunningham, yes, because of what they opened up, of how they released the idea of music serving dance and vice versa. And I think since Cage died, it's really the Cunningham shows I've seen have changed because of the new musical director, even though they still work in that same way of completely separately, but it's not the same because the quality of the music is different, if you know what I mean. So I'm saying that find the right person and let them get on with it is my idea of collaboration.
Daniel?
J'ai des réponses. I'm very close to your choice. Stravinsky, Nijinsky was the first one that I discovered. Dans le sens où ce sont vraiment deux créateurs qui collaborent ensemble sur une longue durée aussi, on a long term, a long project. C'est les trois qui me viennent à l'esprit. Il y aurait sûrement des petits, mais je ne veux pas faire Therese Matteo Fargion et Jonathan Borough who did.
Who are not lovers.
Great work together. Who is very inspiring for me. Mais comment je veux pas être lèche.
Tu peux, ouais, hein. C'est ça. Ça dérangera personne.
Mais honnêtement, toute honnêteté.
Puis peut-être nous parler un peu justement de ce que tu aimes dans son travail, particulièrement, puisqu'on n'en a pas parlé.
J'aime, c'est le que pas. Therese Matteo Fargion. Dans le sens où ce sont vraiment deux créateurs qui collaborent ensemble sur une longue durée aussi, on a long term, a long project. C'est les trois qui me viennent à l'esprit. Il y aurait sûrement des petits, mais je ne veux pas faire Therese Matteo Fargion et Jonathan Borough who did.
Who are not lovers.
Great work together. Who is very inspiring for me. Mais comment je veux pas être lèche.
Tu peux, ouais, hein. C'est ça. Ça dérangera personne.
Mais toute honnêteté.
Puis peut-être nous parler un peu justement de ce que tu aimes dans son travail, particulièrement, puisqu'on n'en a pas parlé.
J'aime, c'est le point zéro. C'est le point zéro. Le fait que, premièrement, la musique est dans les corps. Il n'y a pas de musique diffusée dans les haut-parleurs. La musique émerge, la musicalité des corps émerge d'un travail de construction, un travail d'écriture. On entend la musique à travers les corps. C'est un travail où on ne sait plus qui est le danseur, qui est le chorégraphe, qui est le compositeur. Alors, on parle vraiment d'une écriture à quatre mains. C'est pour moi les fondements de la musique, vraiment, musique et danse. Mm. Mm.
Louis?
Non, j'en ai pas vraiment. Je dois vous avouer que je suis pas nécessairement un spécialiste hein, sur le sujet. Je suis pas. Je vais pas voir beaucoup de spectacles de danse. Je devrais avoir honte de dire ça ici, mais. C'est un médium avec lequel j'ai beaucoup de difficultés en général. J'ai de la difficulté avec la scène. La notion de la scène, j'ai de la misère un peu avec ça. Donc, sinon, je dirais... Mais j'étais un grand amateur de Fame. Et moi, je dirais Leroy dans Fame, puis le compositeur italien, là, que j'ai frisé. Là. Je ne sais pas son nom, mais... Dr. Lily, je sais pas, avec ses synth, Moog, tout ça, ça c'est mon duo.
C'est bon.
Guy? Je peux continuer ce que Louis dit parce que, non, un des livres le plus inspirant des dernières années pour mon travail de dramaturge, c'est le livre qui s'appelle The Conversations. Et c'est une série d'entretiens entre Michael Ondaatje, l'écrivain canadien basé à Toronto, avec Walter Murph, qui est l'éditeur principal du son et de l'image de tous les films de Coppola, mais aussi de The English Patient et plein d'autres. Et la façon dont Walter Murph parle comme lui, comme éditeur, travaille l'image et le son, je me sentais très proche de mon travail de dramaturge. Et il y a aussi toute une évolution que moi, j'étais formé à l'origine en linguistique. Et au début de ma carrière comme dramaturge, je faisais souvent, j'allais chercher des métaphores, des façons de parler dans la linguistique, dans la langue, comment structurer le spectacle. Mais maintenant, je suis de plus en plus intéressé à trouver des choses dans la musique parce que, autour du rythme du spectacle, comment la ponctuation est travaillée dans le spectacle, c'est ça les choses les plus importantes pour qu'un spectacle ait plus ou moins réussi au niveau de l'arc dramaturgique. Là, c'est sûr que j'ai accompagné Matteo et Jonathan plutôt comme diffuseurs et producteurs dès le début de leur rencontre. On était tous les trois des bons amis, mais leur démarche à eux aussi est toujours très inspirant pour mes propres réflexions. En plus, parce que, comme je dis, la musique, c'était peut-être le moins développé de ma connaissance. Alors, j'ai toujours un peu... c'est comme un secret que je voulais mieux comprendre. Mais aussi, ce que Daniel vient de dire, eux deux, et d'une autre façon, Andrzej Kiesmak et Thierry Demey, parce qu'ils ont vraiment travaillé à traduire les façons de faire la composition d'une discipline à une autre et dans les deux sens. La pièce de musique pour table de Thierry, c'est une chorégraphie, mais Anne-Thérèse a basé beaucoup de ses principes chorégraphiques sur des principes de composition que lui lui a offert. Et en plus, comme Matteo, lui aussi donne des cours de composition pour des chorégraphes. Et cette intégration d'échange, de comment travailler des méthodologies, ça c'est même plus intéressant que les résultats qui sont plus ou moins réussis dépendamment du processus ou du moment. Comme ça.
Merci.
And once again, we're back. You're listening to Movement Museum on CKUT 90.3 FM, movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer, or dump the words Movement and Museum into iTunes or into Facebook and see what shows up. So.
I'm just looking at what's coming up in Cinquième Salle. And well, as you might be aware, we're going to be doing our funding drive soon. Mm-hmm. And we were thinking of trying to get some good prizes so that we could use them to raise funds. Oh. And there's Romeo and Juliet by Les Grands Ballet Canadien de Montréal. And I think maybe a pair of tickets for that could be a good incentive.
Uh-huh. You going to go ask them?
I could try.
Or would you like me to go ask them?
Well, either way, I don't mind.
Now, they're speaking of Cinquième Salle. It's the sort of thing where you see what's happening there tonight. Or not, tomorrow. Tomorrow. Tomorrow and Saturday. And guess where I'm going to be? I'm going to be
glued. Hofe Schechter.
No, that's at Théâtre Maisonneuve. Close but no cigar. Cinquième Salle.
I'm on Cinquième Salle's website.
Uh-huh.
And they're saying Hofe Schechter.
Oh, then where's Rubber Band Dance playing? I got tickets for, I have tickets for both Hofe Schechter and for Rubber Band Dance. It's a full jam-packed weekend of dance performances up to here. Uh-huh. You're just mumbling into that microphone, making very entertaining radio there.
No, I'm just looking at the website. I'm trying to get around it.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you're going to see this weekend then, Zeke. What's the deal with the Rubber Band Dance Company? What's going down?
There, what you missed out on was back in, I think it was April or so, I'd been trying to track down an interview with Victor Quijada, who is, in short, makes me giddy like a 16-year-old girl. The hair on the back of my neck stands up and so on. And they had were doing a performance at Cinquième Salle, and I just got all sorts of, like, my innards turned to, like, jello and stuff like that. It was really, really, really disgusting. But I finally was able to get the interview, had tons of fun there, then got to see the performance and had even more fun there. And then suddenly I discovered that, oh, they're giving away tickets to Rubber Band Dance this weekend, and I don't know, I don't exactly cartwheel down to the Place des Arts ticket booth or ticket office or whatever, the place where they sell tickets, give away tickets and so on, because these were all free tickets. But because I'd heard about it, what is it, 2 days, 3 days after they announced it, I was afraid that because Cinquième Salle is so tiny that all the tickets were gone. And when I got there, I suddenly realized that they not only were not gone, but I could get tickets for each night. And so I proceeded to be extremely greedy and took. And so I got a pair of tickets for tomorrow night, and I got a pair of tickets for Saturday night, and I am, as I am wont to say, giddy like a 16-year-old girl, and my insides are like jello. They're just jiggling away there. I don't know if it's green jello or red jello or yellow jello, but it is jello, and I'm sort of enjoying myself.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I'm excited for you.
There's no more tickets left for the Friday night performance now anyway, so you can probably have the last ones.
And then also it is actually a seriously, like, jam-packed weekend for dance, because then there's also, as you said, Hofesh, which I think I'm is coming close to maybe potentially pronouncing correctly. Hofesh. How about we just say, Rachel, how about you save me?
Well, I was going with Hofe Schechter, but I have no idea.
Given that I couldn't even get the Hof. Thank you very much. And then there. Oh, hold on a second. Was my mom confusing me?
Was she?
Well, there in terms of, she sent me an email asking me if I was going to see the Israeli dance troupe. And I then suddenly, because it was my mom, figured it was Israeli folk dancing.
There is. Let's see, what is there coming up? What day is that supposed to be?
That would be the 1st or the 3rd. And I suddenly realized, no, Hofe Schechter is, from Israel. And they're in...
Dan is being from the UK. Dance Dance. And that's going to be, you're right, that's going to be Théâtre Maisonneuve.
And so I think my mind was just getting confused by my mom, because I thought there was going to be an Israeli folk troupe dancing someplace, but then realized just now, you made me realize, nope, not going to happen. It's Hofe Schechter, and so I have to go back to email my mom and tell her, yes, I am going to see the Israeli dance troupe. I just got confused. Sorry, Mom. But then also, Gwen, don't you have tickets for stuff?
I have tickets. I'm going to go see First Waves at Tangente, which is the first part of... selected solos from the class of 2009 from various schools that are teaching dance in Montreal.
Yeah, no, so. I know it is the Danse Buissonnière.
Danse Buissonnière.
Yes.
Is that the title? Or?
That's what sort of okay. shows up when I stick it into, like, or when I go on the French side.
Okay.
I'm obviously having difficulty wrapping my tongue around my lips today.
Cool. Well, anyways, there's five different, this particular, there's two parts. So the first one is in English, first waves, and the second part is surging, which is pretty exciting. First waves and the surging. Pretty cool, huh? Anyways, so there's five pieces in the first evening, and I think there's two in the second, and it starts on Thursday, and if you want to see some young choreographers in Montreal, you should head on down to Tangente.
Yeah, no, they're the following week on the, 8th, 9th, and 10th, I think it is, they have the graduate side, and that right. I'm going to go see, and then hopefully getting cool. Alexandra Spicy Landy to do an interview, because she's doing one choreography there, and if my memory serves, she is the exact specific person and reason why Victor Quijada makes me giddy like a 16-year-old girl and makes my insides turn to jello.
How does that work? How's her, what's her connection? Is she
there? It's there's this performance at Tangente. Man, why can't I'm on the radio and I can't speak at Tangente probably about 3 years ago or so, and for whatever reason I decided that I wanted to go see it, went to go see it, and she was, I think, sitting next to us in terms of seeing it, and then pointed out Rubber Band Dance, which I had known about but had not seen, then ended up getting tickets and was just completely blown away and slack-jawed, and then because I'm not sort of part of that social scene, tried to fight in to figure out where, when, and how all their performances happened, and yeah, now we can like talk to her on the radio and ask her some pointed questions about all sorts of stuff. But yeah, she's the one who sort of said, you should go see this. And I did. And then I was pleasantly surprised. That's an understatement, pleasantly surprised.
That's incredible. I love how it all works together in this beautiful way.
And that's going to be called Second Swells, the 8th, 9th, 10th of October at 7:30 and the 11th of October mm-hmm. at 4 p.m.
And then also if you're much more on the 6th, which is Tuesday as well. So after you've given Miriam your $40 or your $200, but before you go pig out at the food and so on, you should go see, there's this whole new thing where, yeah, just to show you how the dance community sort of does work together, they've come up with this idea of Les Visages de Danse, which is a, conference in French, lecture series in English, although more like a conversation than a lecture series. And so once every month, they go from Circuit to the Grand Ballet Canadien to Tangente, I think it is, and they're talking to various people involved who have been involved in the dance scene. And the first one is Jean Renaud, who is, according to them, in large capital letters, a choreographer and pioneer of modern dance in Quebec. And it's on October 6th. It's at Circuit Est, and it's I think 5:30 or something like that. You can check out the calendar on the website. And last question, because we are running out of airtime and running out of stage space, and Primetime has shown up. He is not only Primetime, but he is on time. And so yeah, do you guys have anything with regards to the audition calls that you'd like to get on the air? That shaking of the head goes out wonders over through the microphone.
Well,
then hold on.
I haven't looked through it.
You haven't looked through it? Okay, because there's one of the things that I like is there's actually, Les Grands Ballets are having auditions on February 20th at 1 o'clock, and it's at their offices, which is 4816 Rivard, and you need to have a repertoire that is neoclassical, classical, and contemporary. You need to bring with yourself a biography, a portrait. You have to have photos of you dancing, and then the audition will be a ballet class. You need to fill out an application form, and then bring a video or DVD of you interpreting a classical piece and a contemporary piece, and it is free. So there, if you want more information, remember, this is Grand Ballet Canadien. If you want to dance, this is, I think, the dance place in town to be dancing if you are a professional dancer. Pretty much the feather in your cap if you pull this off. You give Michel Proulx a call at 514-849-8681, extension 243. But yes, I think we've come to the edge of the stage. There's no more space for us to do Movement Museum. Gwen, I'd like to thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Zeke.
Rachel, I'd like to thank you very much. And this is the Fascist Zeke signing off for another week. Catch us next week. Same bat channel, same bat time.